Okay, today's daf is Bav Metzia, daf Kuf Tes Vav. We're winding down Maseches Bav Metzia. Last few days, Bez Hashem will finish on Shabbos, I believe. Okay, we'll pick up, I missed the last 2 days, so I guess we'll pick up from the bottom of Kuf Yodalad Amid Beis, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. We missed some Geshmaka Agada to Gemara with Eliyahu HaNavi and everything, but we'll pick up from four lines from the bottom. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mashkana Umeis, Shomto Me'al Gabe Banav. If a person gives somebody a mashkon, right, and then the person who had taken the mashkon, the lender who had taken the mashkon, gives it back to the borrower, to the lova, and then the lova dies after he has received his mashkon back. And again, this is not getting his mashkon back because he made the payment. The borrower got the mashkon back because you have to give it back on a consistent basis whenever he needs to use it. So he received the mashkon back, and then he died. So the halacha is, says Rabbi Yochanan, shomto me'al gabe banav. The malva is allowed to go, the lender is allowed to go and take the mashkon from the children of the lova who had it in his possession when he died. Even though normally you're not allowed to take metaltalin from yisomim, that when a guy dies and he leaves yisomim and they're holding on to metaltalin, you're not allowed to collect metaltalin for payment of a debt. Over here it's different. Rashi says ve'eina sesel kashar metaltalin shalahen v'lo mishtabdil balchov. This doesn't become like all other metaltalin that are not meshubatu balchov. The kivin demashkenei kanye, because once he was gave it to him as a mashkon, so he was kona it. That's meaning if you got it as a mashkon, if the lender got it as a mashkon, it's considered his, and he was kona it, and it's as if it's on loan to the borrower. And when the borrower dies, it does not become his; it still belongs to the lender. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter. Says the Gemara Vayter Meisvei. Rameir says, well, once you give it as a mashkon, why do you have to return it? So says the Gemara, what kind of question is that? What do you mean, why do you return it? The Torah says you have to return it. The Torah says when you get a mashkon, it's important to go and return it back to the person who you got it from, whenever he needs it. No, his real question is, if you're going to return it anyway, why would you then go and take it back? Meaning, why is it constantly back and forth? You return it, you take it back, and then when he doesn't need it, you take it back. When he does need it, you return it. Once you've already taken it once, why would you bother go and take it as a mashkon again? So the answer is the Gemara, Shalotei Shavias Mishamtaso, or the Braisa rather, Shalotei Shavias Mishamtaso, V'loyasim Etaltalin Eitzel Banav. That the reason you want to take it back is because so long as you keep taking it back as a mashkon, Shemitah will not affect it. Shemitah will not cancel out the loan, because if the mashkon is biyado and the halacha is a malval a mashkon is eno mishamet, a loan that's with a mashkon, Shemitah is not going to affect, but it's only considered a loan with the mashkon if you still have it, if you're holding on to it. If you've already returned the mashkon, it's no longer malval a mashkon. So therefore, in order to avoid Shemitah canceling the loan, you need to keep on taking it back. And also, the other issue is that if, in case the borrower dies, when the mashkon is in his hands, so that's going to be a problem. You're never going to be able to get that mashkon back. So you want to keep on taking it back so that if the borrower dies, you'll have the mashkon. If you took the mashkon once, then you gave it back to the borrower. If the borrower dies, you're done. It's metaltalin. It's his children's metaltalin. You're not allowed to collect the metaltalin from the yisomim. So you have to keep on taking it back so that it doesn't become metaltalin etzel banav. That's the advantage of keeping on taking the mashkon back. So what do you see? What's the raya? It's against Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan had said that once I take the mashkon from him, even if I've returned it back to him for whatever period of time, and he dies while it's in his hands, it's not going to become metaltalin etzel yisomim. I'm still going to be able to collect it. It doesn't become something that's uncollectible on account of the fact that it's metaltalin that's in this yisomim's property. And over here in this price, Rav Meir says, no, yes, it does. It absolutely becomes metaltalin etzel yisomim, and that's why you want to keep on taking it back. because every time you return it to the borrower, it's going to become a Talton Eitzli sum if he dies during those periods of time. So this is a kasha against Rabbi Yochanan, it's a brisa against Rabbi Yochanan. It says in our time of the Hadar Mashkenei, the clear implication is that the only reason it's not going to become a Talton Eitzli sum is because you keep on taking it back as a mashkon. Hello, Hadar Mashkenei, low. But it sounds like if you don't take it back as a mashkon, then it's no good, then it's going to become a Talton Eitzli sum and you're not going to be able to collect it. So you see that it's a brisa against Rabbi Yochanan. So answers the Gemara, no. Since we have to adjust the words of the brisa anyway, meaning we've already adjusted the words of the brisa once, we already asked and we said, no, it doesn't mean once you take a mashkon, why do you return it? It really meant, and we already changed the words of the brisa, that once you take a mashkon and return it, why do you keep taking it back? So since we're adjusting the words of the brisa anyway, tritzachi, we should adjust the words as follows. That the brisa is really asking, if you're going to return the mashkon anyway, why bother taking it in the first place? Meaning, what exactly is this system that the Torah has set up of a mashkon? The Torah demands that you return it? Then why bother taking the mashkon in the first place if you have to go and return it afterwards anyhow? So that's what the Brisa's real question was. And to that the Brisa says, Shalote shvius mishamtaso velo yasa metaltel netzel banav, that if you were to never take the mashkon in the first place, then it would become metaltel netzel banav. But once you took the mashkon once, then it's no longer going to become a Talton Eitzel Banav even after you return it, which is exactly what Rabbi Yochanan held. So you just have to adjust the words of the Brisa slightly to make them fit with Rabbi Yochanan. That the point that the Brisa is making is that once you take the mashkon the first time, once you take it once, regardless if you return it or you don't return it, even if you did return it back to the borrower, still it's not going to become a Talton Eitzel Banav because it's already been labeled as a mashkon. The couple of points. First of all, Minchas Chinuch writes that if after you return within the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan, that if after you return the mashkon to the lovet doesn't want to give it back to you, so you're allowed to go into his house and take the mashkon bal karcho, because the mashkon, meaning based on Rabbi Yochanan's shita, what do you see from Rabbi Yochanan? That the mashkon belongs to the malvet, it doesn't belong to the lovet. That if the lovet dies, it's not considered his children's the metal of his children, the Yisum of Metaltalin. Why? Because it already belongs to the Malveh. So although you're not allowed to go into somebody's house to take a mashkon, because you're not allowed to go into his house to take, and we're going to discuss that, to take his item, right? But once it's already become yours, it's already become your mashkon, and you've just given it back to him to use for whatever, for the day, for the night, whatever it might be, when you need to get that mashkon back, if he refuses to give it to you, says Minchas Chinuch, you're allowed to go and take it back, because now it's not his anymore, now it's yours. Now it belongs to the malveh, doesn't belong to the loveh. That's a nafkamina that comes out from the shita of Rabbi Yochanan. The other, another issue, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Malveh Lov, Perakimel Halacha Hey, he says, Im kenhu shemachzer lo hamashkon be'ez shehu tzarech lo. If it's true that you return the mashkon whenever the guy needs it, whenever the borrower needs it, v'lokeach oso be'ez she'eno tzarech, and you keep on taking it back whenever he doesn't need it, my yoil mashkon. So the Rambam asks the question, so then what function does the mashkon serve? What purpose does it serve if he's going to get it back every time he needs it anyway? So the Rambam says, Kadesh lo yishamet, in order to avoid the Shemitah problem. Now the Ibn Azel, Rav Yisrael Meltzer, is medayik in the Rambam, that the Rambam asks two things. He doesn't just ask if you're going to give it back, what the mashkon helps. He asks, why do we take the mashkon meikara? Meaning, the Rambam's bothered by why. He doesn't only ask why we take the mashkon meikara, which is the way the Gemara said it at the end. The Gemara said, the Brisa was asking why bother taking the mashkon in the first place if you're going to give it back anyway. That's not the only thing the Rambam's asking. The Rambam's also asking, once you took it and you gave it back, why take it back, right? The Rambam says, if you're going to give it to him when he needs it, and take it back after you've given it back to him for when he needs it. You're going to take it back when he doesn't need it. So the Rambam says, what's the purpose of doing that? And the Rambam says, to avoid Shemitah, gives the answer that our Gemara gives. But the Gemara assumed that the Kasha was only on why would you take the Mashkon in the first place. The Gemara assumed once you took the Mashkon in the first place, it's labeled as a Mashkon. You don't need a reason for why you would keep on taking it back. So the Toras Chaim is Mevarer that the Rambam holds that if the Malva doesn't return the Mashkon to the base, doesn't go back to the base of Lova to keep on taking his Mashkon back, it's going to be considered a Mechila on the Mashkon. And once he's Mochel on the Mashkon, so then Shemitah is going to be Meshamet, the object, and it's going to be Metalton Eitzel Banav. So you do need to keep on, the Rambam holds, you do need to go keep on taking it back because that shows that you still hold it to Mashkon. If you don't keep on going and taking it back, then it's going to be considered a din of mechila, and it's not going to be considered your mashkon anymore. Now, the Gemara gave two explanations why we take the mashkon. First, for the Shemitah purpose, because you don't want Shemitah to cancel out. And second, Shliyasa Metaltalin Eitzel Banav, it shouldn't become Metaltalin by the Yisomim of the Lova. Rosh Hashas points out, of those two answers, you have to realize that one is the Iker and one is just clearly a throw-in as a secondary answer. He says, clearly the Iker answer of the Gemara is the second explanation of the Gemara of the Shliyasa Metaltalin Eitzel Banav, because the Shemitah issue can very easily be gotten around in a majority of circumstances, meaning let's say it's the loan was not during a Shemitah year. It wasn't anywhere near a Shemitah year. It was a 30-day loan in the second year of a Shemitah cycle. So you don't really have much of a threat of coming up against Shemitah. So then why do we take a Mashkon? Then what's the purpose of a Mashkon? So it's clearly not a satisfactory answer to just say the Shemitah answer. You clearly need the answer of Shloyas Metaltalin Eitzel Banav. Also, the Rashash points out, Shemitah is only Meshamet at the very last moment of the year. So Ksus Yom, which at that moment is going to be by the Lova anyway, let's say Ksus Yom, which is the halacha is that when you take a Mashkon that the Lova needs during the day, you have to give it back to him for the whole day. Well, the very last moment of the year is a daytime moment. So it's not going to help that you took the Mashkon once if it's by the Lova at the very end of the year anyway. Right? So but what will help is that Lo Yasa Metaltalin Eitzel Banav, that since it was labeled the Mashkon, it's not going to become a Metaltalin by his children. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter. Tan Rabbanan, Lo Savo El Beso La Avot Avoto, that you're not allowed to go into the person's house to take your Mashkon. Lo Beso Yata Nichnas, you're not allowed to go into the borrower's house to take your Mashkon. Avlata Nichnas Lo Beso Shalarev, but you are allowed to go into the co-signer's house. If someone co-signed on the loan and decided that he's going to be a tzaddik and he's going to help out, so you're allowed to go into that person's house to go and take the mashkon. The Rabbeinu Yohonasan explains that since the loan only took place through an arev and he was only willing to lend him the money if there was a co-signer, it's as if there was a mashkon at the shas halva, and when there's a mashkon at the shas halva, then you're allowed to go into the house. Meaning, what's the mechanics of this? I'm not allowed to go into somebody's house to take the mashkon. Why is the arev less of a human being than the borrower? Why is it that I would be allowed to go into the arev's house but not the borrower's house? So Ben Yonason says, no, it's that when there is an arev, it's as if you were malval a mashkon at the shas halva, and when you're malval a mashkon at the shas halva, then you are allowed to go into the person's house. It's only when the mashkon was afterwards that you're not allowed to go into the person's house. So this is considered that it was a mashkon b'shas halva. That's the mechanics of it, according to Rabbeinu Yohonasan, according to the Shittim Betzes. The Iyun Yaakov is mevayer that the reason that the Torah doesn't allow you to go into the Lova's house is because it's embarrassing to the Lova. Right? It's embarrassing to him that you're going to go into his house and that you're going to, because he hasn't paid you back and you're going to take stuff from him. As opposed to by the Arev, since he's not the one that borrowed money, right, he's only covering for somebody else, so it's not embarrassing for you to go into his house. So a totally different svara. It's just that it's the whole isser of going into the house is only because of the embarrassment issue, and there is no embarrassment issue when it comes to the arev. But either way, that's the halacha. The halacha is, according to this brisa, you're allowed to go into the arev's house to take a mashkon. V'cheinu omer, And we have psukim to back this up. The pasuk says, "Lekach bigdo ki ariv zar," that you're allowed to go and take his beged because he was a cosigner for a stranger. I mean, he went and he was a cosigner for somebody else, and therefore you're allowed to go and take his stuff as a mashkon. Ve'omer, and we have another series of psukim in Mishlei. Bini, imarafta l'reacha, takata l'zar kapecha. Bini, if you've been in either of these two situations, either arafta l'reacha, you served as a cosigner for somebody else, or takata l'zar kapecha, you stretched out your hand to somebody else, which also means you were an ari for somebody. Nokashta v'imre ficha, nilkadita v'imre ficha. Or you've said something that was insulting to somebody else. You've done something that wasn't, you said something that wasn't nice to him, or you embarrassed him or insulted him. Asay zos, this is what you should do, efo b'ni v'inatzel, in order to get yourself out of it. Kivasa b'kaf re'echa, leich hisrapis rav re'echa. Go and be friendly to him, essentially, is what it means. So, but we're going to darshan that it means something else. Im mamun yesh lo b'yadcha, we're going to darshan it means as follows. What does hisrapis mean? Says Gemara, it means, if you're in the first of the two circumstances described in the pasuk, the first of those two circumstances being that you were in a situation where you became an arei for somebody, hisrapes is a play on words, is a combination of the words hater lo pisas yad, right? Hisrapes yadcha means hater lo pisas yad, open up the palms of your hand, meaning give money. If you became a cosigner for somebody, give up the money, you have to pay it. The imlav. And if that wasn't the problem, but rather the problem was that you insulted him, you said something that wasn't nice to him, hirba lavrayim, you should go and make sure that there are a lot of go-betweens between you and him. He may be too insulted to want to talk to you, so you may want to get a lot of other people to go and try to convince him to forgive you, try to convince him to be mekabel, whatever you have to say, so that he can forgive you. That's a good idea. L'tzad sheni, another pshat in the pasuk, right? Rashi says over here, l'tzad sheni kimo davar acher, that the phrase l'tzad sheni means davar acher. It's an interesting usage of it's an interesting way to say davar acher. In the Biur Yadav over here, he quotes the Kosa Yeshuos, that the Gemara uses the phrase l'tzad sheni when both pshatim are equally correct. Davar acher is when one is to the exclusion of the other. L'tzad sheni is when both pshatim are equally correct. So l'tzad sheni, what's the second pshat in the pasuk? I just lost place for a second. Yeah, lebeso yatenichnas, avlatenichnas l'schar kasef l'schar chamer l'schar punduk l'schar diuknos. That you're not allowed to go into someone's house when you lent him money, and now you want to go take a mashkon from him. But you are allowed to go into his house to take a mashkon if he owes you money for other reasons, not because you lent him money, but because you worked for him as someone who carried things, schar kasef, you carried things on your shoulders for him, and he never paid you. L'schar chamar, you were a donkey driver for him. Pundak, you were an innkeeper for him. L'schar diuknaos, which Rashi says you made art, you made paintings for him, you did artwork for him, and he never paid you for it. So for all those things, if he owes you money for those things, then you're allowed to go into his house, take a mashkon. Yachal afilu zakvan alav b'milva. I might think that even if the money owed has been turned into a loan, that you're also allowed to go. Tam lomer masos mu'uma. That's why the pasuk says masos mu'uma, to show me that no, I'm only allowed to, whenever it's a loan, I'm not allowed to go. But if it's not a loan, if he owes me money for other things, then I'm allowed to go into the guy's house to collect for him. Now the question is. Okay, so there are certain halachos that govern a mashkon. For instance, I'm not allowed to go into a person's house to take a mashkon. Another halacha that governs a mashkon is that whenever the lover needs the mashkon back, I have to give it back to him. Good? Those are the two basic halachos that govern a mashkon. This Gemara is very clear that when he owes me money because I worked for him, halacha number one doesn't apply. I'm allowed to go into his house. There's nothing stopping me from going into his house. Is that telling me that this isn't, we don't have to follow the normal rules of mashkon, and therefore halacha number two doesn't apply either? I don't have to keep giving it back to him whenever he needs it? Or is it, no, it's dafka, halacha number one of a mashkon doesn't apply. I'm allowed to go into this guy's house, whereas normally I'm not, but all the other halachas of a mashkon are still going to be in play. That's the discussion in the Rishonim. The Ran and the Ramah write that it's even that even though it's mutter to go into his house to take the mashkon, but still the din of Hashavas HaAvot still is going to apply. You're still going to have to return it to him when he needs it. The Bala Truma says that no, there's no mitzvah of Hashavas HaAvot over here. And the reason is that the makar of the din to return the mashkan when he needs it is from a hekesh of Micha Micha from Erechin, like we've learned from the dapim that we missed. And the pasuk says, V'im Machu only says it by a Balchov, and the V'im Machu is not said by a Socher, a Poel, an Arev, or any of these people. And therefore, all the halachos that are derived from V'im Machu don't apply to all these other relationships, to all these other people, including the halacha that you're not allowed to go and that you have to go and return the mashkon when the guy needs it. Doesn't apply by these other halachos. So, okay, so that's the basic discussion in the Rishonim about how many of the dinim of mashkon are suspended for these types of cases. Says the Mishnah, new Mishnah. Almana bein shehi aniya bein shehi ashira ein memashkenosa. An almana, whether she's poor, whether she's rich, you don't take a mashkon from her. Shneamar, because the pasuk says lo sachbal beged almana. You don't take a mashkon from an almana. So that's it. End of story. There's nothing to do with an almana being poor, rich. Doesn't make a difference. You're not allowed to take a mashkon from an almana. Rabbi Kiveger brings three shitos over here regarding the din of an almana. Shita number one is the sheet of the Sma. The Sma writes that it's not only an almana that it's usher to take a mashkon from. The truth is, what's the reason why you don't take a mashkon from an almana? So the Gemara is going to explain. The reason is that it's going to look bad. You keep going to this woman's house. There's a woman living alone, and there's no man in the house, and you keep showing up. You keep going every morning to go give back the mashkon from the night before, take the mashkon for the day, and every night doesn't look good. If you keep going to this woman who's living alone, keep going to her house. So the shita of the Sma is shita number one is that it's not only about a mashkon of an almana. Same would be true if the woman's a grusha. Right? If she's a woman living alone, it doesn't matter if she's an almana. Just the point is, even if she were a grusha, and the reason is that both an almana and a grusha have no one to support them, and they have no basic system of support, so the Torah asks it. Let's say she's just a single girl who's never been married yet. Stama Basula, 18-year-old girl who's not yet married, she's just 19, 20, whatever, just starting to date. So Basula, that's still Bereshus Avia, the Torah doesn't ask her, then you're allowed to go take a mashkon from her, says the Sma. But an almana is not only a din of an almana, it's a grusha also. It's any woman who's on her own and has no support, has nobody who's responsible for taking care of her. Such a woman you're not allowed to go take a mashkon from. The second shita is the shita of the Shach. The Shach writes that that dafka and almana, the isra to take a mashkon is dafka by an almana because it's an issue of tsar. You're going to go and be mitzar to this woman after what she's been through. She lost her husband died, and you're going to go and be mitzar. She has a broken heart, and you're going to go and keep taking away her mashkon. But if she were a grusha, besula, the Torah doesn't answer it. Because a grusha, although it's a painful experience to go through, it's not the same kind of shvira slave that an almana has. And the isser doesn't apply equally to a grusha, says the Shach. And the Tumim writes that chalila lahosif on what it says in the Torah. If the Torah says you're not allowed to go take a mashkon from an almana, it means you're not allowed to take a mashkon from an almana. It never says you're not allowed to take from a grusha, never says you're not allowed to take from a besula. So the Tumim, in agreement with the Shach, that the Torah says what the Torah meant. You can't take a mashkon from an almana. But let's say, meaning if we were to try to figure out, whenever a woman's alone, you're not allowed to take a mashkon. Let's say a woman's husband is on a business trip. You're not allowed to take a mashkon from her either? No, there's no such halacha. It would be absurd if we would keep on applying. Let's say the husband's just at work right now. Meaning, no, what the Torah says, almana, it means almana. It doesn't mean we should start making up our own rules that it should apply to a grusha, and to this one, to that one. It means dafka almana. That's shita number two. That's the shita of the Shach. The Taz says the other extreme. He says not only does it apply to a grusha, meaning obviously almana where the Torah says, and also a grusha, it even applies to a besula. Even if a girl is just a single girl, you're not allowed to take a mashkon from her. That which the Mishnah mentions almana is because the Mishnah speaks in the most common case, that it's the derech almana, lasos masu matan. It's normal for an almana to be involved in business because she needs to support herself. A besula is not going to be involved in any business transactions because she's being supported. She has her father supporting her. So it's not normal to have a situation where you're taking a mashkon from a besula, but lu yitzuyur, if such a thing were to come up, then you'd be allowed to take a mashkon from the besula. What if a girl was an almana min ha'irisin? She was not an almana min ha'irisin, so she's still supported by her father. So again, if you say like the first sheet of the Sma, that it's only an almana or a grusha, because there's no one to support her, the chor an almana min ha'irisin, you'd be allowed to take a mashkin from, because there is someone to support her. Her father is still supporting her. The Minchas Chinuch in Mitzvah Tav Kuf Tzadi Aleph writes that it's Pashut, it's Pshita, that an Almana Mina Erisin is also the Mashkana Lakuli Alma, and also by a Safek Almana. So he doesn't assume that way. He assumes that an Almana Mina Erisin, Lachar Zadavra Pashut, that you're not allowed to take a Mashkon from her. Okay, anyway, that's the three basic Shitos in terms of taking a Mashkon. The Rashash writes that the Torah Dafka says Beged Almana, since any other Kalim. Meaning, why is it Dafka Beged? One thing we discussed, why Dafka Almana, or is it Dafka Almana? Why is it Dafka Beged? So we quote the Pasuk in the Torah, Losachbol Beged Almana. So the Rashash writes that the Torah, that we Dafka use the word Beged, the Torah Dafka uses the word Beged, and all other Kelim are only Midrabanan. If it weren't for Beged, it would only be an Isra Midrabanan to take the Mashkon. And the Chinuch, it's also clear that someone who takes something from an Almana, the Chinuch seems to say the other way. The Chinuch says, if you take anything from an Almana, you're over on a Los Asay, seeming to indicate that Beged is Lav Dafka. Anything that a person takes from the Almana that is going to be over below Sasei. The Rashash asks that according to Rabbi Yishmael, that whenever the Torah uses the word Beged, Rabbi Yishmael is a Shita in Yevamos Dav Dalet, that whenever the Torah uses the word Beged, for instance by Tzitzis, you put Tzitzis on a Beged, it's Dafka Tzemer Upishtin. It's only on a Beged that's made of either wool or linen. It's not anything else. Anything else doesn't have a din of Beged. That's the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel. That's why cotton tzitzis, let's say if you have a cotton Beged, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's only chayv and tzitzis midrabanan. It's not going to be chayv and tzitzis midaraisa, because that's not a Beged midaraisa. Right? That's why there are a lot of people that are makbid to dafka have a wool Beged. Why? It's not stamp something they made up. It's based on the idea that that's going to be chayv and tzitzis midaraisa lukuli alma. So wait a second. If you're going to assume like the Rashash, that Beged only, that the only Isudar rights of taking a Mashkon from an Almana is if you take a Beged, taking any other Kli from the Almana is only an Isumid Rabbanan, right? If you're going to assume that way, and you assume, like Rabbi Shmuel, that whenever the Torah uses the word Beged, it only means Tzemer Upishtim, so the Chor, we should have a big Chiddush over here. That the only Isra of taking a Mashkon from a woman is if you take a Beged of Tzemer Upishtim from her. Take any other Beged and it shouldn't be a problem. The Chor one should be able to say such a chiddush that it's dafka Beged that it's made out of Semeru Pishtim. It seems that the Achronim assume not that way. The Achronim quoted in the Biuri Adaf over here assume not that way. They assume that, no, you have to look at what the Svar over here is. The reason is you can't keep on coming back to the Almana's house for something that she needs constantly, like her clothing, her Ksus Yom, her Ksus Laila. So for Ksus Laila, for nightgown, is made out of cotton, so she needs it. You're still going to be going to her house every 2 seconds, and based on that, it would still be a problem. There's a lot more to discuss over here. Just I guess very briefly, just to raise the issues without going into them. The Rishonim have a major discussion if the dinim over here of the mashkon apply. If the din of this mishnah applies even by a mashkon dafka by a mashkon shelo b'shasalva, or even by a mashkon b'shasalva, because we said by a mashkon b'shasalva certain things are not a problem. You're allowed to go into a person's house to take a mashkon b'shasalva. What about going to an almana? Right? Does that apply even by a mashkon b'shasalva, or only by mashkon shelo b'shasalva? That's a major machlokas in the Rishonim. I guess we're not going to get into it now because we've got to get to the Gemara a little bit. Okay, says Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Almana ben shi'aniya ben shi'ashira, ein mashkonosa. You're not allowed to take a mashkon from an almana, whether she's poor or whether she's rich. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbi Yehuda shita. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon says, no, ashira mashkonosa, aniya ein mashkonosa. If she's a rich woman, good, go take a mashkon from her, no problem. It's only if she's poor you can't take a mashkon from her. Why? Shatachayv lahachsu lavata mesir shem rabbi shchinoseha. The only reason you can't take the mashkon from the almana is because you keep on having to give it back. And if you have to give it back every 2 seconds, it's going to cause you to have a bad reputation, and you don't want that to happen. So therefore, if she's a rich woman where she has million other pieces of clothing that she could wear. And she doesn't need this mashkon back every day. You can keep it for a month at a time. It doesn't matter to her. She's got plenty of clothing to wear and she won't even notice it's gone. She's a very rich woman. So then you're allowed to take the mashkon from her even though she's an almana, because nothing's going to come of it. It's not going to give her a bad reputation in her neighborhood. So says the Gemara, wait a second. L'meimra de Rabbi Yehuda lo darish taima de krav Rabbi Shimon darish taima de krav. Does that mean to say that Rabbi Yehuda is not dorish taima de krav, meaning the reason for the pasuk that you don't take a mashkon from an almana is because it's going to cause her a bad reputation? Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't care about the reason. I care about the halacha, and the halacha is going to apply whether the reason applies or not. So Rabbi Yehuda is not dorish taima de krav. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, you got to look at the reason. The halacha is only going to apply when the reason applies. But the halacha is not going to apply if the reason doesn't apply. So you see, Rabbi Shimon is dorish taima de krav. But wait a second. We learned that the exact opposite is true in terms of who is and who is not dorish taima de krav. Titania, we have a brayso of loyar below nashim. King is not allowed to have too many wives. Rabbi Yehuda Omer marbahu bulvach loyuhu masirus zibo. And Rabbi Yehuda says he can have as many wives as he wants as long as they don't turn his heart astray. Rabbi Shimon Omer afilu achas v'masirus zibo areza loyisena. Rabbi Shimon says no. If he was going to marry a woman who's going to turn his heart astray, even if he only marries one woman, if she's a bad woman, he shouldn't marry her. If she's the kind of woman that's going to turn his heart astray, then even if it's only one woman, he shouldn't marry her. You don't need a big chiddush in the Torah to tell me that a king shouldn't marry a woman who's going to mess him up. What does the pasuk mean, therefore, when it says lo yar b'lo nashim? Afilu kavigayil. Even if he marries nashim tzidkaniyos like Avigail, even if he marries women who are only going to encourage him in the right direction and not point him in the wrong direction, still he shouldn't marry them. What do you see? That Rabbi Yehuda holds that if the reason you're not allowed to marry many women is that we're afraid it's going to be meiser eslibo, it's going to turn his heart astray. So as long as the reason doesn't apply, then he can marry as many women as he wants. Rabbi Yehuda's the one that's doresh time of the kra. Rabbi Shimon says, wait a second, no, the Torah says you can't marry many women. I don't want to hear about reasons turn his heart astray. Can't marry many women. Forget about any reasons. We throw the reasons out the window. Halacha is the halacha. Rabbi Shimon is the one who's not Dorish time of the Kra. It's a stira. Right? When it comes to our halacha of taking the mashkon from the almana, Rabbi Shimon is willing to be Dorish time of the Kra. Rabbi Yehuda does not. When it comes to marrying the king, marrying many wives, it's flipped around. Answers Gemara, Liolam, Rabbi Yehuda, lo darish time of the Kra. Really, Rabbi Yehuda in general is not Dorish time of the Kra. Veshaini hacha, why over here, when it comes to marrying many women, all of a sudden is Rabbi Yehuda Dorish time of the Kra? The Mefarish Kra, lo yar b'lo nashim v'lo yasser. Because he's not the one that invented that reason. The Torah itself gave that reason. The Torah said, lo yar b'lo nashim v'lo yasser, that he shouldn't marry many wives so that his heart not be led astray. My time lo yar b'lo nashim, the Torah is telling me, why can't he marry many women? Mishum de lo yasser. Only so that his heart not be led astray, which is the Torah's way of telling us that if his heart is not going to be led astray, then it's fine, then he can marry whoever he wants. For Rabbi Shimon will say the opposite. Michti, bi'alma darshina time of the Kra. Rabbi Shimon would say, we always are Dorish time of the Kra. Rabbi Shimon Shita, that if the Torah says you're not allowed to take the beggar of an almana, we figure out the reason must be because you don't want to give her a bad reputation in the neighborhood, and therefore, if it's a situation that she's an Ashira and she's not going to have a bad reputation anyway, you're allowed to go take the mashkon. But if that's true, that we're always going to figure out the time of the Kra on our own and we're going to dashen it anyway, lichtov rachmana lo yarbe v'lo b'inan lo yasser. Why does the Torah waste words when it comes to the king marrying many wives? Anyway, all the Torah is telling me is the king shouldn't marry many wives. We'll figure out on our own the time of the Kra. That's what Rabbi Shimon always does. He figures out the time of the Kra and says that when the reason that we think is the true reason for this pasuk applies, the halacha applies, and when the reason doesn't apply, the halacha doesn't apply. So why does the Torah waste words by saying lo yasser? Right? We already know that the reason lo yarbe is because lo yasser, we don't want his heart to be led astray. Lo yasser to kasev rachmanu. So why does the Torah go out of its way to say lo yasur? So it says Gemara, afilu achas masira libo hareza lo yisena. Teach me a chiddush that even if it's only one woman, but she's masira libo, that he's not even allowed to marry one woman who's masira libo. That's the extra chiddush of the pasuk over here. That because the pasuk wouldn't need to tell me this phrase. So It's not that Rabbi Shimon is not the Rish Taima Dekra. He is the Rish Taima Dekra. So over here, the Pasuk told me the reason, and it was unnecessary for the Pasuk to tell me the reason. The Tumim over here says that if this the idea is that she shouldn't have a Shemra B'Shechinu Seha, you can't take a beggar from an Alman because she doesn't have a Shemra B'Shechinu Seha. What if the woman borrowed money from another woman? So who's going to be coming to take the mashkon? A woman's going to be coming to take the mashkon. So should it then be okay to take a mashkon from an almana? If it was a woman who borrowed money from another woman? So he says it's not going to be lead to a shame ra. Or if the son, let's say, gives the halva to his mother, where it's a son coming to visit his mom every day, to go take a mashkon. It's a little bit rough that he's got to go take the mashkon from his own mother every day, but it's certainly not going to cause a shame ra when it's a son going to his mother. So there's the reason no longer applies that he can't be mashkon. It should be mutter to be mashkon. Certainly, according to Rabbi Shimon, it should be mutter. Right? According to Rabbi Shimon, that we're darish time at the krat, that the whole reason is that it's going to lead to a shame ra, so there should be no problem. So the Chachmas Menoch is mitarets that even when it's a woman that lent money to an almana, it's still us to take a mashkon, because the only way you're allowed to go collect a mashkon in general is through the Shliach Beis Din. The Shliach Beis Din is going to have to go collect. So if the Shliach Beis Din keeps on showing up, and the Shliach Beis Din is by the Almana's house, again, it's vaita going to be Masiyah Shem Ra B'Shechein Oseha. So it's going to still be no good. So it's not going to help anything if Shliach Beis Din is going to keep on showing up. Now, the Maharam explains that according to everyone, you're allowed to give reasons. I mean, just going on this issue of Dorish Tami Dekra, Maharam writes that according to everyone, you're allowed to give reasons for halachos that it says in the Torah. The issue is if there's nafkamina ladina to that. Meaning, the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim, the Sefer HaChinuch and every single mitzvah, they give reasons for all the mitzvahs. Doesn't mean they're passing like Rabbi Shimon that you Dorish Tami Dekra. Meaning, you're allowed to take dinim of the Torah and say, let's just try to figure out if there are any logical reasons that, you know, give it a little bit more meaning to us. The question is, can you assume that your reason is so correct that it's going to change the halacha? That when your reason doesn't apply, the halacha is not going to apply. That's the machlokas Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yehuda. Everyone agrees it's kosher to give reasons for what it says in the Torah. What they disagree about is whether it's kosher to say that your reason is so correct that if your reason doesn't apply, should the halacha still apply? That's where there's a machlokas. But everyone would agree that it's okay to give reasons for what it says in the Torah. The Margolios Hiyam in Sanhedrin says that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon only disagree if you were Dorish time and Dekra to Aser what the Pashtus of the Pasuk, the like Losachbal Begad Almana, where it says Stam, and it doesn't make a chilik between Ani and Ashira. But whenever the time of Dekra is not going to be so ser, not going to be against the Pashtus of the Pasuk, so then everyone would agree we're Dorish Time into Krah. So that's another klal in Dorish Time into Krah. And a third thing, the Tumim writes that anything that's very clear, that says the Tumim, that it's a davar barur, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't just give us mitzvos for fun. Meaning, there are obviously good, important reasons why we have every single mitzvah. It's just that Rabbi Yehuda holds that. And says the Tumim, and we might even know the reasons. When we suggest a reason, that reason might be the reason. The issue of Rabbi Huda is not, when he says that you're not Dorish Taima Dekra, is not because he's not confident that the reason we come up with is the right reason. Says the Tumim, no, we could be absolutely confident that's the real reason for this mitzvah. The issue is, according to Rabbi Huda, it's a low plug bin Doraisa. That it's as if the Torah is saying, this is the reason, but you know what? Even when the reason doesn't apply, the rule is a rule. It's as if the Torah made a low plug. We're familiar with the concept of a low plug of the Rabbanan making a low plug. The way the Tumim understands Rabbi Yehuda's Shita is that it's a low plug midaraisa. That even though you do have the correct reason, and that's exactly why the mitzvah applies, for the exact reason that you thought of, but the Torah says it's a low plug. Whether the reason applies, the reason doesn't apply, you're still going to have to observe the halacha. Whereas Rabbi Shimon would say, no, only if the reason applies, you have to observe the halacha, not if the reason does not apply. One more quick ha'ara on the, just within the prat, this issue of a king having many wives. There's a well-known machlokas Rishonim, the Rambam, the Ravid over here. What does it mean he's not allowed to have many wives? The king is not only allowed to have wives, he's allowed to have pilagshim also. So Yarbalo Nashim means, does that include pilagshim as well, or just wives? So the Rambam writes that the Pasuk is talking about both Nashim and Pilakshim. You're not allowed to have more than 18 combined, Nashim/Pilakshim. Whereas the Ravid says that no, the issue is Layabalo Nashim, Nashim are Ali de Kiddushin, as opposed to Pilagshim. It's also interesting the difference between an Isha and a Pilagesh, the way the Rambam defines the difference between an Isha and a Pilagesh, and it's really Rashi and Chumash also, and based on the Gemara, is that an Isha is with Kiddushin and with Ksuba, and a Pilagesh is with Bili Kiddushin, Bili Ksuba. So that's a major maramakom in the Sugya Maseches Ksubas, whether Ksubas Daraisa or Ksubas Drabana. If the difference between an Isha and a Pilagesh is clearly a Daraisa Chilik, right? A woman who one is married to versus a Pilagesh, that's a Daraisa status, being a wife or not being a wife. Now, if the defining difference between them is whether she has a Ksuba, that's a strong indication that Ksuba is Daraisa. Because if the status is Daraisa, the difference between them, L'chora, should have to be something that's also Midaraisa. Okay, new Mishnah. Hachovel es harechayim over mishum lo sasei, v'chayim mishum shnei kelim. If you take as a mashkon a mill, so you're violating lo sasei, and you're chayim for both kelim, because it has two parts to it. Shnerma lo yachbol rechayim v'rechev, lo rechayim v'rechev bovad amru, el kol davar shosim v'alchol nefesh, shnerma ki nefesh u'chavel. That you're not allowed to take anything that is used, that aids in ochel nefesh. So kinefesh u'chavel, that's considered as if you're taking away the guy's nefesh. The machlokas Rishonim we mentioned earlier, whether this applies by a mashkon, only mashkon shelo b'shas halva, or even a mashkon b'shas halva, that machlokas is over here as well. Does this apply by mashkon b'shas halva? Anyway, but either way, the Mishnah says that it's a violation of a lo sasei. The Maariv Chayis writes, even though you get malchus on this lav, like the Gemara is going to say, the lashon of over below sasei is an appropriate lashon to use for a lav that you get malchus. Meaning, normally, the Maariv Chayis is sensitive to is normally when you get malchus, the Mishnah will use the phrase lokin alav instead of saying over below sasei. Over below sasei makes it sound like it's one of those exceptions, that it's something that it's a low sasei, but you're not going to get malchus for. So Maariv Chayis says, no, the phrase over below sasei is often used even when you're going to get malchus. And over here you're going to get malchus as well. And he says, based on this, he doesn't understand. He says, the Yad Malachi asks on the Kesef Mishnah, where the Kesef Mishnah writes that any time it says over below sasei, it always means that you're over, but you're eno loke. That's a chiddush that the Kesef Mishnah has in Hilchus Klai in Perek Yud Halacha Lamed, Hilchus Chumas Perek Gimel Halacha Chaf Gimel, that whenever it says over below sasei, it means you don't get malchus. So says the Maariv Chayis, this Gemara is a clear raya the other way. The Mishnah says over below, so say the Gemara is going to be talking about how many malchus you get, right? So it's clearly going to be talking about getting malchus over here. Even though it uses the phrase over below, so say. So that's a major ha'ara. Amrav Huna, chaval rechayim lo kashtayim. If you take as a mashkon a rechayim, a mill, you get two malchios. Mishum rechayim and mishum kinefesh u'chavel. One for the rechayim, and one because the pasuk says kinefesh u'chavel, that you're not allowed to take anything that's ochel nefesh. Rechayim v'rechev lo kashalosh. If you took both parts of the rechayim and the rechev, then you get three malchios. One for each kli that you took, mishum rechayim v'rechev, and because of the general rule, umishum kinefesh u'chavel, which is a general term that the pasuk uses, so you get malchus for each of those three surin. Rav Yehuda Amar, Rav Yehuda says no. Chavel rechayim lo ka'achas, v'rechev lo ka'achas, rechayim v'rechev lo ka'shtayim, kinefesh u'chavel l'shar dvar muda'asa. And Rav Yehuda says no. For each item that you take a rechayim, you take a rechav, you get malchus for each of those items that you take. What's ki nefesh u'chavel? Not to add an extra malchus. Ki nefesh u'chavel comes to teach me that it's not only rechayim rechav, even shar devarim, even other things that are not mentioned in the pasuk. Other kelim of ochel nefesh, not the rechayim, not the rechav, other items that might be considered ochel nefesh items are also included in the yisr. But it's not to tell me, it's not to add an extra malchus on taking the rechayim and the rechev. There's no extra malchus for that particular issur of taking the rechayim and the rechev. Says the Gemara, Lema Abaye v'Rava b'Pulta d'Ravuna review the Kamiflaki. It seems that Abaye and Rava, actually that we're about to see, argue in this machlokas that we just saw between Ravuna and Raviuda. What did you see the machlokas Ravuna and Raviuda was about? The Torah used the general term and then gave specifics. Are we to understand that the general term is an added malchus? it's an added iser in those cases where you violate the specifics, or is the general term speaking about something else? It's coming to be marba, a different case. So we find that Abaye and Rava have the same machlokas. Why? The Amar Rava, Rava says as follows. By the Korban Pesach, the halacha is that you're only allowed to eat it tzli esh, you're only allowed to eat it roasted, you're not allowed to cook it, you're not allowed to eat it raw, it's dafka, got to be roasted. The Amar Rava, achal na, lo keshtayim, mishum na, mishum kim tzli esh. If you eat it raw, so you get two malchios. One, because na, you ate it raw, and the second is kim tzliyesh, that you're only allowed to eat it roasted. So you violated both. Mevushal, if you eat the Korban Pesach cooked, lo keshtayim, you get two malchios. Mishum mevushal, one, because it says you're not allowed to cook it, and mishum kim tzliyesh, it also says you're not allowed to do anything but roast it. So you have to roast it. So you see those are two separate yisurim. Na umavushal, what if you eat it both, na and mevushal? How many malchios do you get then? So lokesh shalosh, you get three malchios, says Rava. Why? Mishum na, mishum mevushal, mishum losach lenu kim tzliyesh. Now losach lenu kim tzliyesh seems to be a much broader iser. It means anything that's not roasted is a problem. Na and mevushal are very specific, right? And yet you see Rava holds you get all three malchios. Abaye, Amar Abaye says, no, ein lokin alav shebechlolos. You don't get malchus on alav shebechlolos, meaning on the lav that's all-inclusive of kiyim tzliyesh, that includes many other examples, you're not going to get malchus on such a lav. So lema Abaye damak Rav Yehuda, Rava damak Rav Huna. So doesn't it line up perfectly that Abaye says like Rav Yehuda, that whenever you violate the klal and the prat, and they're both included in the same lav, you're only going to get malchus on the prat, not on the klal. And Rav is going to say like Rav Huna, that you can get malchus on the klal as well. So amlecha Rava, Rav would say no. Anada amri afiluk Rav Yehuda. I could even assume like Rav Yehuda. Ad kan lokam Rav Yehuda asam el dechi nefesh hu chavel lo mashmer rechayim v'rechev. Hilkoch l'shar dvarim u da'asa. Because when did Rav Yehuda say his din? When the phrase nefesh hu chavel does not specifically imply rechayim v'rechev. So that's why nefesh hu chavel might be teaching me about something else. Aval hacha ki im tzliyesh l'mayasa. But over here, when you say that it can only be roasted, as opposed to what? Obviously, it's as opposed to being cooked, as opposed to being raw. So that's the only thing the pasuk can mean. It can't be teaching me some other din. There's no other din. It's roasted or not. Right? So obviously, when it says ki im tzliyesh, it can't be telling me anything else. Shema mina l'lav. It must be coming to tell me for the lav. V'abaye yamalach, and Abaye would say, anoda amri, afil Rav Huna. I could even agree with Rav Huna. Ad kal nokam Rav Huna, asam ele d'chi nefesh u'chavel yaseiruhu. The kivan di yaseiruhu, shadi arechayim v'rechev. Nefesh u'chavel is completely extra. So since it's extra, we apply it to rechayim v'rechev. Aval hacha ki im tzliyesh lav yaseiruhu. But over here, the phrase ki im tzliyesh is not extra, because we're going to need it for the braisa that we're going to Be'ez Hashem learn tomorrow. When we start tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem will see where we need Kiyim Tzliyesh. So that's the difference between the two drashas. Over here, the phrase Kiyim Tzliyesh is not extra. So Be'ez Hashem will go over some of those points tomorrow. There's some important ha'aras to make on that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.